Yeah, so I was just like, let's just keep the pinatas. Like, they just had their time and place. But then I was like, let's go to
I love it.
fashion.
I mean, you always have a business to fall back on. If, Lovolu, you need a break, you just go back to making
You
pinatas.
know, honestly, that may just be a thing. Just give me a few years.
Hey y'all, today Bus Ride Talks is looking at fashion with Lovolu creator Fasayo Quadri, who brings us radical honesty on how celebration is not only for special occasions. The journey of cultivating self-love and learning to celebrate you as you are right in this moment. Let's get into it.
Hi, Fasayo, how are you?
Hey, Davinia, I'm good.
I'm so excited that we get to have you. So you are a fashion designer. You have created a whole line. And I'm just really excited to get to talk about clothes and fashion and like how you built this. But I want to just start with getting a look into you. So Lovolu is your brand. And I love what you said on your website. It's a lifestyle brand inspired by joy and made with love. Can you tell us a little bit about like what you've built from that brand and how you came to it?
So I would say Lovolu initially started as like a play on the first part of my name because my full name is Olufosayo, but I just go by Fasayo. And so I kind of held on to like the Lovolu part as like me kind of giving a piece of myself that I kind of don't necessarily like share that much. And so initially I started like making mini pinatas and things like that in my freshman year of college. Like, and it was just for me like a way to kind of celebrate the each day, right? And so over time, like I transitioned from pinatas to balloons and then eventually it turned into clothes.
That's amazing.
And I was like, we kind of turned into like party clothes, and then like everything just really stemmed from this idea of really getting to this core of celebrating yourself every day. And in undergrad, a lot of my work kind of stemmed from this idea of deconstructing the notion of special occasion as deconstructing the notion of celebrations like only as special occasion. So it was more so incorporating it in your daily routine and whatever that looks like for you. So maybe it's not necessarily confetti or things like that. Maybe it's like taking a walk outside or finding ways to be more mindful. And so for me, Lovolu kind of became that outlet for not only my fashion, but more so just like a general inspiration for life.
That's amazing. And of course it would come from pinatas. I mean,
Yeah.
what better, bolder form of celebration is there than a pinata? That makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's
Now, you mentioned your undergrad. You went to Pratt University in New York, right? Did you go for fashion design?
Yes, I went there for fashion design, and then I also like minored in photography. And
Oh,
so,
really? I didn't know that.
yeah, so it was just like, it's funny because a lot of the photography I did was more so in terms of like self-portraits. And the photography aspect kind of came into play with me really looking at the way I see myself and how dress kind of transforms how other people see you. So a lot of my work kind of explores the idea of celebration of self, but also thinking about celebration in terms of community and really creating that environment where you are free to celebrate yourself and what that looks like.
I love it. So everything seemed to come from like a place of celebration and how to incorporate that, which is a really necessary thing. I think I remember reading something a long time ago about how someone was just going back on a journey of how they realized they didn't have to hold special things for like when you think it's going to be a special moment. You can just make
Yeah.
it a special moment.
Right. That's so good. And I think like a lot of times, well, at least for me, I think that sometimes it's so hard to celebrate yourself because sometimes it feels like maybe like you're, doing the most
Oh,
or
yeah.
whatever. But I think that like really kind of getting into that practice of celebrating yourself and being patient with yourself is really like what's necessary in order for you to like be a well-rounded person. And I think also it's just the idea of the fact that, it's not, sometimes it's, you don't really have the freedom or the safety to celebrate your full self, And so I feel like it really kind of comes down to your own individual journey and what that looks like for you. And so for me, being able to create from a place where there ultimately is that goal for you to be on that journey of celebrating yourself daily really is kind of like my life. So,
Life journey. Yeah, and it has
yeah.
to be like you kind of have to make it a practice too,
Yeah.
especially if you're not used to celebrating yourself. It's then it's sort of the same practice of, like, you have to look in a mirror and be like, I like this about myself, I like this right. about myself. Yeah. To just build up that self-love. And then it just becomes a thing. It just becomes a habit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really, like, the most important thing is being able to cultivate that habit naturally, so you're not, like, randomly waiting, like, for your birthday every year to celebrate yeah. yourself, you know? And it's funny because I think, like, I'm always the person where I'm just like, okay, like, whenever people sing happy birthday, it's like, this is weird.
It's but, so awkward. You
know, like, you're the only person, like, standing there, like, you know, you can't sing happy birthday to yourself. You're just, like, waiting. But
everybody's looking at you. It's a
yeah,
whole
thing. But I think it's really kind of being in that space where you're okay with that, you know, and yeah. you're being able to embrace that. And I think that that truly is, like, what I really try to get at with my work is how can you be, like, truly okay with being able to show up for yourself and being able to really celebrate yourself as you are, not like as you want to be, because that really is that whole thing about being like, well, I'm not there yet, so I don't know. But it's like, okay, well, we're here today, you know? So.
Yeah. And I think that's the question that I would have is, like, I'm not particularly adept with, like, clothing or understanding clothing and things like that. How does mm-hmm. that sort of core idea of celebration translate into the clothes that you build and, like, the clothes that you want to build?
Yeah, I think that for me, when I think about clothes, it's interesting because I explore, like, this idea of, like, special occasion, like, dressing up, but then also, like, mm-hmm. trying to be comfortable, right? So
right.
I think it's, like, finding that line between, like, celebrating every day, but then also, like, having these moments where things are maybe a little bit more special. So it's, like, mm-hmm. dancing between the lines of, like, something that maybe can be dressed down or dressed up. Really thinking about, like, what... really how you can make that how you can own that for yourself, right? So you can yeah. really kind of, like, take something and you can style it however you want based on how you feel that day.
Oh, that's really fun. Okay, so yeah. sort of like a dress up, dress down kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And then, like, making, I think that goes back to the idea that you gave of you can make this a celebration thing. You can make it a special item of clothing by how you dress it up. And that's really right. neat to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, I think it's something that I feel is extremely important. And I think that even when I create, mm-hmm. even though it can be worn every day, I think there is something special about you having moments where you're like, okay, this is like my Friday outfit or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's still something that is still precious. So I know that for me, like, you know, you can take it and own it and make it however you want, but there still is this, like, special attention to detail and care that goes into something that's handmade and something that is just, like, meant to last for a long time. So.
Now, everything in your brand is handmade, right? It's, like, it takes a long time for you to craft these items.
Yes, and so we are working on expanding that as well, because I don't plan on being the only person making things. Like,
yeah, I mean, I imagine that's exhausting. These pieces yeah. these are elaborate pieces that you're building, beautiful shirts and blouses, and the pants that you just made have, like, a beautiful line of ruffle that goes down the whole leg. That's yeah. a lot of work.
Yeah, you know, so that's why I'm just like, okay, let's really, like, I honestly was at a point where I was like, wait, this is, like I said, when I started selling clothes, it happened very organically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, hold on, like, you really have to, like, sit down and realize that this is labor
intensive. It's happening. Yeah.
And it's definitely, like, it's not only just labor intensive, it's also, like, a labor of love. And yeah. I think that for me, when I create, I want to make sure that people understand the value of what they're getting, in addition to, like, a beautiful garment, you know? So that's mm-hmm. why I'm, like, at a point where I'm like, okay, you know, you can still make things, like, one-off pieces, but also, like, you know, find ways to make things, like, more efficient, you know?
Yeah, how do you do this without burning out?
Yeah, you know, and I think also I'm still trying to be at a place where I can still, like, maintain, like, my art practice with, like, illustrating and things like that. So it's definitely a balance between the two, but we're still navigating that. So
yeah, and I want to go back a little bit, because I remember you coming out with the Love a Loop brand, and I remember mm-hmm. one of your blouses, I think the first blouse that you made, really took off. Like, it was everywhere online. It was a lot of influencers bought it. A lot of, like, really high up people on the social ladder were wearing this and were saying, this is the Love a Loop brand. Like, this is where I got it from. And it really took off. Mm-hmm. What was that experience for you? And, like, how did that sort of change what you ended up building, if it did change it?
I would say it came as a surprise. Honestly, I mean, I just did it. I was, like, in quarantine, and I just, like, I had been working on the top for a little bit, but it was something that I was just like, well, I want to create something beautiful, right? Like, I still want to have hold on to something that would remind me of, like, 2020 being something that, you know, something good can come out of something that doesn't necessarily look beautiful. And so, like, when that top, like, took off, I was like, wait, hold on. I did it because I loved it, you know? And so other people responded well to it. And I was like, wait, okay. Like, let's really sit down and think about, like, what this actually is going to look like. So it happened very organically. And I really had to kind of be like, oh, okay, this is great. You know, this actually is, like, it's not just great to you, but other people resonate with it, too.
Yeah.
So that definitely just made it, it was really encouraging, and I'm really grateful for, like, the support that I got with it. And it also made me realize, like, you know, we can, like, really, really do something here, you know? So,
yeah.
So, like, right now I'm just, like, working on some more pieces and like, just really kind of giving myself, like, pacing myself with my progress. So
that's good. Yeah, I think there's always that moment, too, when you're creating something or when you're in front of something where you're like, oh, this could really be a thing. Like, mm-hmm. it resonates with me and I've liked it, and maybe, you know, like, family and friends have been supportive, but then when it's other people, especially people you've never met before, that's when it, like, really hits. You're like, oh, this is real. I'm really doing something.
Yeah, and I think that's what, something I was like, oh my gosh, okay, cool. Like, you know, you can't just, like, hide, you know? Like, you can't.
No, you couldn't. It was everywhere. It was so great to see.
Yeah, so it's exciting. And I think that, to me, something that I really do value is, like, creativity and community, and really just being able to create a space where people, like, feel, like, comfortable celebrating themselves as they are, right? Because I think ultimately that's the whole goal, is that, like, yes, we all have, like, our like, idealized versions of ourselves, but I think that, you know, something that you really kind of have to hone in on is being able to be mindful of where you're at the moment and still be able to celebrate how far you've come. And that really is kind of, like, what that, to me, that's really what everything I create kind of embodies, that celebration of self, like, as you are in the moment, not necessarily as, like, a future self that you one day want to be.
Fasai, you're dropping so much wisdom right now, right? Like, isn't that the goal? I think one of the things I'm working on is that sort of mindfulness and, like, present self. And I really kind of just, like, got out of a bad period where I wasn't in a very good place with that. And then you kind of come out of it, and you do just have to be happy with, like, where you're at.
Yeah.
And then also, like, in these journeys where you're trying to be comfortable with who you are, you have to be okay with the fact that you're in the middle of that journey and not just, like, look forward to the end. It's a very complicated thing.
Yeah, and I think it definitely is interesting because, like, you know, there is a rise in, like the self-care movement and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of times you think that self-care looks a certain way, and it's, like, to you it may be something different, right? And I know for me, something that I've kind of had to hold on to is the fact that, like, every day won't look like a celebration. You know, every day won't be happy. Some days are really going to be terrible. But if you can just find something to hold on to that can kind of encourage your spirit, to me, that's, like, the most important thing. And whether that means, like, how you dress to make yourself feel better, or maybe it's, like, taking, like, a little bit of time, like, 30 minutes in the morning to just spend more time and, like, meditate and sit with yourself, like, to me, that is, like, the most important thing. But, like, I think definitely after last year, it just made me realize, like, how important it is to really take a step back and reflect. Because every day won't be fun. Every day won't look like a party with pinatas and balloons and confetti. Like, you wish that would be reality, but it's not. And I think that maybe that is probably the beautiful part, is, like, finding something pleasant in the storm. And knowing that even if it's not fun, and even though it's not something that you enjoy in the moment, that eventually, like, it's going to turn into something good for you. But it definitely is just, like, a constant, like, reevaluation of how you're approaching every day. So,
yeah, you have to, like, really look at how you're perceiving situations. And then sometimes, like you said, the thing, like, there's not, every day can't be a celebration, but sometimes you can celebrate going to bed.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's
exactly
a celebration.
You know, exactly, like, celebrating, like, eating healthier, drinking enough water, right? Like, to me, it's those little things where you kind of sit down and be like, you know what, I am proud of myself. I did accomplish this today, you know? And I think that sometimes it's so easy to get lost in like the to-do list and the distractions of life, and like every day on the news, like it's something that comes up, you know, that kind of makes you feel like, what's going on in the world, you know? But I think that you kind of have to find ways to like log out and like tune into yourself and really pay attention to like what's going on. And you know, I think it's just a daily process. Like, no one has all the answers, and you kind of have to be okay with that. And I think that that's probably the scary part, is like being okay with not knowing, but knowing that like you're kind of on that journey to keep discovering, and as long as you don't like quit, like it's gonna be okay. So
words of wisdom. Thank you, Fasaya.
That's what I tell myself. Like, honestly, that's what I tell myself. It's like, no matter how hard it gets, like, you can slow down, but don't stop. So
right. And this is one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because as much as you get to design and create, and that's probably really fun, there's also like a business aspect to it, where this is no longer, it's not entirely just a fun project. This is a business. It's a functioning thing. How are you sort of balancing that, you know? How does that work for you and in your line?
Well, right now, because I used to do more so like releasing drops, like every few months. But I kind of got to a point where I was like, okay, you know, everyone has their own like ways of working. And you really kind of have to figure out what that looks like for you. So for me, it's like developing systems like on the back end that, you know, you can kind of hold yourself accountable to, and be also being flexible in the process, right? Because just because something, you may want something to happen at a certain time, things may come up and you have to like really readjust, and then also plan ahead to anticipate things that, you know, you may not expect, you know?
Right.
And I think that also with really starting a business, I kind of told myself that, you know, just because you're starting small doesn't mean that you have to think small. So that really just being mindful of thinking about what strategy works best for me, knowing my working style, and knowing that, you know, it's a big responsibility to take that leap, and know that, you know, it's just like, it kind of just became something that I had to just like learn to step into and be okay with learning every day. But also knowing that you won't know all the answers. So being okay with like reaching out for help and asking people questions, but really just like developing systems on the back end that can really help you kind of approach each day more strategically.
Yeah, and it's really, there's an interesting thing, at least I know in my experience, as Tim and I were creating like Greatest City Collective, it does, there's a point where, you know, it's fun and you have like your creative ideas, but then you get really technical when it's like, okay, taxes, okay, like need to form like our business brand, and like all of these like actual like state applications and federal applications that are really heavy and like make you question. You're like, ooh, do I really want to do this? This is like for real.
Yeah, you know, it definitely, I definitely understand that. And I think also because like I realized that like it's a big responsibility, right? Like, and I think that you kind of have to be patient with the fact that you don't know everything, and you know, it's not wrong that you don't know everything. You learn by doing, right? So if you don't do it, then you're never gonna learn like what's right for you.
Yeah,
you know. And I always say, like, no matter how much advice you get from other people, like, no advice is, like, going to amount to the fact that you have to do the work and see what works for you, right?
That's because so true.
Because someone can tell you something, but it may not necessarily work for you, because everyone's brain works differently. Everyone has a different workflow. So you really have to kind of adapt and realize that, like, you know, you can be inspired by somebody, but at the end of the day, like, they're not you, you know, and you're not them. And I think that's the magic that you really have to tap into it and really see that as your power. So yeah, that's just like things that I tell myself like all the time. It's like, you know, it's great to be inspired by people, but you really have to own like what makes you you, and know that your workflow is different, and really just embrace it and figure out ways to be honest about your strengths, and then be honest about like areas that you really have to improve and like be on top of. So
yeah, and I imagine there's a lot of like self-reflection and a lot of you within your business. And I think what is so different in fashion in general and for you and the work that you're doing is, like, you have a clientele to serve in a very specific way and that, like, will respond to you too and, like, respond to your clothing. What is that's a whole other level of responsibility, right? Like, it's very tactile the way that your work is interacting with these people. How does that affect you or affect, like, what you build?
It's interesting because I think that, you know, like, anytime you have a business, you really have to start thinking about, like, your customer first, right? So it's not just about, like, what you want to put out. It's really about what other people want. And I think that really takes another form of, like, really sitting down and doing the work and knowing that, like, sometimes doing the work is just reading, you know? It may not necessarily be about producing, like, 30 things, you know? And I think that that's really something that I've had to kind of, like, sit down with and really take the time to step back and reflect, like, okay, this worked, this didn't work, like, how can we readjust? But ultimately, something that I had to realize is that, like, you know, at a certain point, like, you know what you're doing, you know? Yeah. And I think that people resonate with you when you're true to yourself. And I think that that's really what happened, like, even when I was making piñatas, like, how many years ago? But, like, people can feel, like, when you're excited about something, right? Yes. And I think that that's something that you kind of don't really have to think too much about. There are times when you do have to really sit down and be like, okay, this has a reason. Like, you need to sit down and think about this, this, and this. And then there are other times where it kind of just flows more organically. So I think it's really just finding that balance between the two, between, like, yourself and, like, what other people want, but not thinking too much. So that definitely is, like, a process of getting out of your own head.
And it makes so much sense, too, because I think what people tend to gravitate to, especially when, you know, strangers are involved, is sort of, like, assurance. There's, like, certainty, and, like, not necessarily certainty in that you know everything, but certainty in that you know at least some of the things, like, some of where you're going. And I imagine that's what people really gravitate to Love Alu for, because even from just, like, your website, you can look and you see visually on the page and visually in what you create that there's very much something there. Like, you're sure in what you are, what your ideas are. And whatever questions you may have are not necessarily something that get in the way of the fact that you're producing something that you're certain about by the time you've put it out, which is really great to see.
Yeah, and it definitely, I think, like, as a creative, you're constantly, like, no matter what you do, like, you're constantly thinking a lot, you know? So definitely, I think there really kind of just comes to a place where you're like, okay, you know, like, I've done my best and this is enough for now, right? Like, you kind of have to let go of that idea of wanting things to be perfect, you know? And I guess that definitely is hard, but I'm kind of just tell myself, like, done is better than perfect, right? Like, because you can't keep, like, sitting on something and then it never comes out, you know? But I think there also is, like, sometimes you have to learn that something won't work out and that's okay too, you know? But you have to just keep trying and know that, like, ultimately, like, you can slow down but don't stop. So keep trying and keep going through that process. But I think that, like, the journey of entrepreneurship is definitely something that, like, a lot of people don't understand that it takes a lot more work than, like, just posting something on Instagram, you know? Like, it's not.
I talk about LLC Twitter a lot. Yeah. More than I probably should, but it's a whole thing, and it's just, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I think that that really is something that you kind of have to, like, pay attention to about yourself, because, like, it's not easy, right? But it's worth it, but it definitely comes with you, like, sitting down with yourself and knowing that you have something important to bring to the world. So even, like, when your doubts come up or even when you think that something is, like, you keep hitting a wall, like, knowing that eventually, like, you're going to push through it. But you have to just kind of sit with yourself sometimes and know that some things are, like, worth the wait.
Yeah. So many good things to think about, and so much about being a business owner is, like, involved in your work. And because I do want to move us into, like, the more personal, but I still want to hear a little about your work, I'll kind of mash up these two questions. And because I have to ask, because Fasayo is a PG County native, another Prince George's County girl, we're very happy to have
amazing.
I want to know, like, how does your background and, like, where you're from, because there's so much more to your identity than just, like, the geographical location where you grew up. Is that part of your work? How does it influence, like, your designs and what you build?
You know what's so funny? I think about, like, when I was in high school, we both went to Flowers.
We both went to Flowers. We've had another Flowers alum on this show, too. So
really?
It's amazing.
Oh yeah, I remember, like, my senior year, I did, like, a community service project, like, teaching kids how to make headbands. And
yeah.
I remember that, and it was, I didn't realize how ambitious it was to, like, make, like, 1,000-something headbands. Like, 1,000.
I remember that project. I remember you did do that.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it was, like, so crazy because I was like, oh, this is easy. But I didn't realize that it was that big of a deal until, like, later. And I was like, wait, like, that took a lot of strategy and planning and fearlessness, mm-hmm. right? And I think that sometimes, like, when you get older, like, I think definitely when I went to college, I was like, wait, this, like, the world is, like, huge.
It's like, huge.
You know, and, like, you know, it's, like, a lot of people. And sometimes you think that, because you're just one person, that, like, you know, you're just one person. But I think that really being able to recognize that your voice has so much power, mm-hmm. And really being able to bring out that sense of community in other people by doing what you love is something that I've really held on to, and that's something that I really appreciate about growing up in PG County, that there was the sense of community and support that we kind of all had within, like, for one another. And I really do, like, I always love the DMV, so, like,
yes.
It's always going to be, like, a place where I'm just, like, you know, you realize that anything is possible, and that you always will have people around you who really want to see you win, so it's, like, really great.
Yeah, you can see the way that, like you said, community is part of your business, and it does mm-hmm. come from that place and the base that we had in PG County, because it really does feel like, you know, there's different experiences, of course, for people, mm-hmm. but when you leave PG is when you really realize that that is, like, there's a unified experience.
Yeah.
In the very sure. least from, like, being from that region.
Yeah. For sure.
Now, I have to ask, pinatas. Where yeah. do the pinatas come from?
You know, it's so funny. So, I really don't have the words. But I used to, like, get packages from the mail center, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, anytime you would get, like, a care package or something from home and college, right. like, I would just hold on to the boxes. And so I would just, like, collapse mm-hmm. the boxes in my room. And then I used to go to, like, this party store, like a 99-cent store, like, mm-hmm. by Pratt. And I would just buy streamers because, like, I just like the party supply section, like, stationery yeah. and stuff. And so, like, sometimes I would just, like, create backdrops in my room and just, like, throw, like, a little party of one. I would just cut up cardboard, like, with an X-Acto knife and, like, sit down and, like, plan out the shapes. And then just sit down and just, like, put them together. So I would, like, cut up the streamers one by one and everything. And so I was,
oh, my gosh.
It's, like, so embarrassing, but,
No, not at all. This is the coolest thing I've ever heard. I've never spoken to anyone who, A, makes pinatas at all, and B, that's just so fun. That's amazing.
Yeah, I had to stop at a certain point, because I was, like, this is, like, this is insane, but I would literally, like, cut up streamers, like, and, like, glue them on, like, one by one, and then make them into, like, lipstick and, like, makeup palettes and cake slices.
Yeah, that's so a lot of work, too.
Yeah. So it would be very much, like, very specific shapes that had to do with fashion. So it wasn't like,
okay.
It wasn't just like, it was just like a random pinata that looked like a donkey. They were very mm-hmm. much like fashion pinatas. So it was just like, wow.
Does any evidence of these still exist in the universe, or are they lost?
Sure. I'm pretty sure somewhere on Pinterest. Like, I'm pretty sure. I could send you pictures.
I would love to see them. That's incredible.
Yeah,
and I just, you know, I don't think we, like, you look at a pinata and you're like, this is this very colorful and elaborate thing. But, like, you do have to, like, put every individual layer of, like, that fabric or that paper that's on there.
Yeah.
That's very time consuming.
It very much was. And I was just like, it was a little stress reliever from school at first.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And then I kept, like, selling them, and then they became bigger, so it went from, like, mini pinatas to, like, big pinatas, and I was
wow.
I can't do this anymore. I was like, I have to stop. Like, it was insane. Like, one of them was like a ballerina.
Oh wow.
I would like make the tulle and, like, cinch it up and sew it together, then, like, glue it on the cardboard. It was very much like a very intense process, and I was like, okay, we have to, like,
this is like sculpture work at this point. This isn't even a pinata.
Honestly, yeah. So I was just like, let's just keep the pinatas, like, they just had their time and place. But let's go to fashion.
I love it. I mean, you always have a business to fall back on. If, you know, Love Olu, you need a break, you just go back to making pinatas.
You know, honestly, it may just be a thing. Just give me a few years.
Well, besides pinatas, was there an art form before fashion for you? Was, like, what was art before it was design? If it was ever art before?
I think, like, for me, illustration at its core was, like, my main focus. I remember, like, I think my first instance of, like, really loving art, I think I was, like, maybe in first or second grade.
And
I was,
like, that's early.
Of a bird.
Yeah.
I was a picture of a bird, and I was just, like, I don't know what it was, but I remember that. I remember, like, sitting down and, like, really, like, drawing that and feeling proud of myself. And I still, like, think about that to this day. And it's just, like, okay, I can do this. And then I've always had, like, a very encouraging family. So, like, to me, I always knew that that was what I wanted to do. Like, I always knew that fashion was what I wanted to do. But then I think that, like, college was definitely an experience that made me really push my potential. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that was just, like, way, like, you know, you're really on to something, but you have to keep going, you know, you really have to keep honing in on, like, who you are and tuning out the noises of, like, what other people keep saying, you know. Mm-hmm. But it definitely was something that was just, like, the more I realized that I actually could and just kept trying it, the more things started to fall into place. So for me, I would say that, like, illustration definitely was the starting point, and then, like, fashion definitely came into the picture. But I definitely at one point did want to be a ballerina. So I think that definitely is where the tool, like, keeps coming back into play. Like,
there is a lot of tool, like, in your work.
Yeah. So at one point, I definitely did want to be a ballerina, but then that didn't work out. So, you know.
Who doesn't want to be a ballerina, at least for a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah, very much is.
Now, I do, one of the things I'm interested in, because it's so different in, I think, performance art versus, like, visual art, is when you're in school, there's a different level of, like, generating that has to happen if you're, like, in a visual arts degree. Mm-hmm. How did that work at Pratt, and, like, how did that affect what you were able to do? Because I know you mentioned the pinatas were, like, a release, which is still its own form of creation and generation, but it's happening under your own power and your own desire versus, like, classes where you probably had to build designs and build concepts and do a lot of illustrating, probably rather constantly. What was that like for you?
It was a lot. I think, like, really, it's something that I have to kind of, like, just balance, because there's the constant creation and ideation, but then also at a certain point you kind of have to be like, okay, well, what am I getting out of this, you know? Because you have to explore and really kind of keep asking questions in the process, but then also, like, keep that end goal in mind without feeling like you have to be, like, A to B, right? Like, sometimes you go to, like, A to L to Z to A to, like, come back, you know? But, like, I think that you, like, being able to really sit down with your process and explore, but then also know that, like, you may not necessarily get to your desired endpoint in the time frame that you want. But I think that definitely being at Pratt really, like, taught me about thinking holistically. And also thinking fast. and like making decisions and like really committing to the process and seeing things through, even if it's not necessarily like what you initially thought it was. So I think that's the whole thing about like creating, is that, you know, as you make it, kind of becomes a life of its own. And then you kind of have to keep going back to like what your initial goals were in the process and what that looks like now. So.
That makes sense too. And like Pratt, I think, is so Pratt is in New York City, right? That's in like lower Manhattan, right?
They do have a campus that's in Manhattan. I was in the Brooklyn campus. So it's like the Clinton Hill area. Yeah, so I loved it. It was a great experience.
I imagine there's something different to be in school for design too, and to be in the city in Brooklyn and so near to what is like known as like a fashion capital of the world. Like, what did that influence your experience at Pratt at all? And like, did that influence the program at Pratt?
I would say definitely yes. Like, you know, you have access to so many museums, so many, like, people who have, like, great style. I definitely, like, had to make it a point to leave the studio because I spent a lot of time working so much to the point where I didn't really give myself enough room to, like, go out and have fun. But I think that, like, there's so much exploration that happens with being in New York that, like, there are so many things that you can do for free, right? And you can get so much inspiration from. And I constantly found myself, like, going to art galleries and going to openings and things like that. And that really was, like, a huge source of inspiration for me and my work.
That's good. Well, that's another question that I have for you, too, is there's so much involved in running your business and designing, and I'm sure it's all rather really time consuming. And a lot of what you take in is probably for inspiration and builds of what you build becomes part of what you build. But what do you do to kind of step away from that, especially since I know mindfulness and celebration is such a big part of what you've been thinking about? How do you just, like, have fun?
That's a great question. I have not really thought about that, but I am working on, like, being outside more. Like, for me, I wouldn't necessarily say it's fun because I feel like it's very much, like, boring.
Because, like, I love that perspective.
Like, yeah, just, like, going outside, like, whether it's, like, taking a walk or something, or, like, trying to jog. Like, I try to be committed to exercising. Mm-hmm. Still working on that, but it's
I'm not there, so kudos to you.
Yeah, but I definitely, something I really do love is just, like, being at the library and reading.
Oh, that's so great.
I, like, right now I'm looking at a lot of, like, archives with vernacular photography, and specifically looking at, like, African-American representation and thinking about spaces where people were able to freely celebrate themselves, right? So, like, to me, I think that that kind of goes back to, like, capturing the spirit of a person, because I think that really is, like, what resonates with somebody. Like, you can feel their energy. And when you're around somebody who really just has, like, a sweet, genuine soul, like, you can feel that. So for me, I kind of, like, think about artists who are able to, like, incorporate that in their work, and it, like, inspires me. So definitely libraries are, like, a way to unwind.
Libraries are such a quiet place, too. I remember the experience of, like, my mom's thing for childhood. My sister was, like, a big, big book person, and I actually wasn't at the time. And, like, now here I am.
Yeah.
And my whole life is, like, writing and work.
Yeah.
But my mom would just, like, throw us in the library for hours. She'd be like, okay, go do what you want. Because it was the one place she knew my sister would, like, not run around and be crazy. She was like, just go read. And you just, like, walk around. Even when I wasn't really interested in, like, reading the books, it's just such a peaceful place.
Yeah.
That you really can kind of come back to that mindfulness there.
Yeah, that, to me, I think that's probably the best thing. Like, listening to podcasts and, like, creating without the intent of, like, it turning into something beautiful. That definitely is something I'm just like, okay, this, like, it's okay if this is not, like, gonna turn into a textile, or this is not gonna turn into a design that I make, but just, like, creating for the sake of creating. I think that's something to hold on to, because, like, we're so used to feeling like, at least for me, I think after the success of the first top, I was like, okay, wait, now I have to, like, keep producing. And it's like, wait, hold on. It's okay to not produce, like 30,000 things in a second, you know?
Right.
But I think just kind of being intentional about what you create and what you put out, and just knowing that you have a responsibility as a creator to, like, put beautiful things out in the world, and be mindful of, like, the environment as well.
Yeah.
Like, slow, to me, like, slow fashion is like the future of fashion. Like, really being intentional about, like, what we're creating and, like, how much we consume, because, like, as a creative person, you're never going to stop creating, but I think that we all kind of have a responsibility to be mindful of, like, what we're putting out in the environment.
That's so true. Jake, join us.
Yeah, I just want to go back for a second, because I think this is, like, the universal mantra of why, like, what makes successful artists, if you will, have more longevity. And it's something that, like, I continue to struggle with, even though I heard it and I know it a million times, but, like, how do you get yourself to freely create? Because even when I try, halfway through, if I feel like it's a cool thing, I then try to make it a thing. Like, whether I mean to or not. So, like, how do you navigate that?
You know, something that, and this is something I recently have to start, I recently have put into practice, is to, like, not judge myself in the process of creating, right? Because, like, a lot of times, it's like, well, this is good or this is bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I give myself time to just, like, doodle, to collage, like, to just, like, just mark make and just see what it turns into. If it turns into something beautiful, great. And if it doesn't, like, that's okay. It's not necessarily about the end goal. I think for me, something I really am trying to get into is just mastering the discipline of making, and just staying driven for the sake of knowing that this is, like, what I was called to do on this earth, you know? And I think that sometimes it's so easy to get caught up in the pressure or the expectation of success or whatever that looks like. And you kind of really have to take the time to silence that noise. And I think that's probably why the library is, like, a good place, because, like, you can kind of sit down and learn from people who have had creative careers that, like, are inspiring to you and see how they work. But ultimately, like, you kind of just have to sit with yourself and know that, like, some things won't be beautiful and some things will never see the light of day, you know, but you did it for yourself and it made you happy. And I think that that's really where that, to me, that joy comes into play, just, like, giving yourself the freedom to create without the expectation. And it's hard, but it definitely is something that I feel like is helpful for me to, like, hold on to. So
yeah, it's really a bit of a brain exercise. And this is, it's, Bus Ride Talks is always so timely for some reason. It just always seems to work out that way. And that one, like, this is a, it's funny that this is a concept we keep coming back to, no matter who the artist is that we're speaking with, this idea of, you know, being able to create and generate without expecting the end result. And I think it's something that just across creative endeavors, you just struggle with, because if you're a creative person, you feel like that's what you should be doing all the time. But then there's kind of a trap of, like, well, if I want to be creative all the time, then everything I do needs to be good, right? Or everything that comes out of that creativity should be worth something, should be valued.
Yeah. And I know, like, for me, I specifically, I have a really weird obsession about time. And, like, and things like that. So for me, I always feel, I think I just get nervous if I don't make something that has, like, a certain value, I guess, to me, or, like, or something to put out, then I wasted my time. And I can't, like, I can't get over that sometimes. Sometimes I don't think about it, and those are great days. But more often than not, that's kind of, like, the bigger struggle, I think, that I fall into, and I know a lot of people tend to fall into.
Yeah, and when you say time, do you think, like, it's running out of time, or do you think that, like, you just... You know, that, I can relate to that.
That's a, it's a tricky trap, too. I think that's one of the things that I'm grateful to have, like, not worked my, like, my way out of, but I think one of the things... So, I've been working on a book for a really, really long time, and I think I just got to a point where I kept having, like, a benchmark of, like, okay, by 20, by, like, this time, by, like, this age or this year. And then I was just like, you know, it's clearly never going to happen on the benchmark that I wanted to, because I got to keep moving it. So it's just going to happen when it happens, and it'll be great when it does. And, like, who knows when the frick that'll be? I have no idea.
That definitely, that's so funny. And I think also because, like, I realize now, like, it's weird because I, like, think, turning 25 this year is, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I think, like, what did I do for the past, like, 10 years? Like, I feel like, you know, I was just, like, in high school, you know, like, where did the time go? But I think, like, it's so funny, I'm like, I'm still 5'1", I still feel like I'm, like, a little kid. But I think that that's something that, like, you kind of have to, like, trick yourself out of thinking that you're running out of time, because that, like, anxiety is not gonna do anything good for you, right? You know, like, we're still so young, like, we're still figuring things out, and I think that the more patient you are with yourself, like, the better you'll be able to, like, be right in anything that you do, because, like, it sounds like 25 is old, but it's not, like,
not even a little bit, not even close.
We still have, like, so much of our lives ahead of us, and I think that, you know, clearly society puts like this expectation of, oh, you should be doing this, this, and this by this age, mm-hmm. you should have this figured out. But it's like some, like you just don't know. You just don't know, right? And it's like really just about discovering your own personal journey and mm-hmm. being patient in the process and know that you really have got to like sit down with yourself and know that it's gonna, like, things will happen if you keep doing the work. And I keep telling myself that, like, it's great to have plans, but also just know that sometimes things won't go according to plan. But you still have
my least favorite thing,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that really just holding on to that is important.
I blame the 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Of like graduating college.
Did you ever have those? I didn't have those. I don't know.
I had to do I had to write out a 5- and a 10-year plan for 2 fellowships that I applied to.
Yeah.
Ew. Like
coming out of college, yeah.
It definitely, I think that definitely is something. I remember I had a job interview one time and they asked me, like, where do I see myself 5 years from now? I'm just trying to see myself today. Like, you know, like.
You're like, don't ask me that.
I don't know.
Employed? Does it matter? Is it relevant?
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I think it's important to have long-term goals in mind, but also know that, like, life happens. Like, nobody expected 2020 to go the way it did, you know? But, like, you can either choose to, like, you can choose to either adapt to, like, what life throws your way, or you can keep feeling like you have, like, you're running out of time and like nothing is ever gonna go right, and it's like it's not gonna help you, so you have to just sit down and like adjust.
No, and I really like the difference that you said, you know, because there is such a, and this probably can be applied creatively, right? Like, there's a difference between a plan and a goal, in that even the best laid plans, as they say, can go awry,
right?
You know, no matter like your intentions, no matter your best outcomes, no matter if everything goes right, but if something goes wrong, then that plan is just, you know, it's gone, and you have to adapt, you have to readjust. But when you have a goal and you're just like, I don't quite need to lay out every step of how I'm going to get to that goal, and that's something I'm working on. If you saw my room and see my life, you'll know I live by sticky notes, very strategic sticky notes that are everywhere. I have like 5 calendars on 3 different things. It's everything is always laid out, but it doesn't matter how much I structure, things still just sometimes go wrong and I just have to reimagine it. But if you have an end goal in mind, then I think you can be adaptable, right? You can say, well, I don't necessarily need to take this path. I can take another path, and maybe it'll take a little longer than I thought it did, but I still know where I want to go. At least I have an idea.
Right.
And I can follow that idea.
Right. And I think definitely like patience in the process.
Yeah.
Really, like, really, really, really key.
Patience is very tricky for me, but yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think that with everything, like, realizing, like, you're only one person, right?
Yeah.
You can't do everything. So, like, asking for help and, like, being okay with, like, trusting people with things that you care about is, like, a whole, like, it's definitely a process. But I think that that is something that, at least for me, I know that, like, being patient in the process is something that you have to kind of just know that things will happen as long as you keep working. But, like, it may not happen tomorrow. Like, just keep your eyes on the end goal. But know that there are systems in place that, like, may not necessarily work or work out in the time frame that you want. But I feel like you just keep learning by doing, so.
I think so. I've said it before. Time is really, it's not an enemy of creativity, but it's certainly, depending on your relationship to it, can be more of a hindrance than anything else, both in just, like, time limits and also, like, the time that you place on yourself, you know, the pressure you place on yourself.
Yeah, I think definitely I'm at a point where, like, I have to, like, free myself from that pressure. Because I think that, like, as a creative, like, things come naturally to you, so you kind of just have to, like, embrace that. And not feel like you need to put pressure to be like, well, this time next week I need to have such and such done. Like, yes, it's important to set deadlines and goals, because if you don't hold yourself accountable, like, nothing's ever gonna get.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, I know certain things are out of my control. So, like, how can we readjust with the right attitude and not feel like the world is ending every time something comes up that is, like, pushing your deadlines back? But yeah, it definitely is a process, so.
And I imagine that probably happened often too, because you know, you really took off in the middle of the pandemic. So I'm probably sure there were a lot of like various setbacks to mm-hmm. all of the work that you already were doing and like planning to do.
Yeah. So it definitely, definitely was an experience. And I think that like, I kind of had to own the fact that I started during the pandemic because mm-hmm. I didn't, like I said, it was not necessarily part of my plan to start like that
way. Here we go with the plans.
You know, but I think that like, just knowing that I created something that resonated with people, that people enjoy, is something to hold on to. And I think it just made me realize that like, you know, we really are capable of doing so much.
Yeah, I really want to hold on to what you gave us too just a little while ago, where you said that it's important to remember that you're only one person. And I think as you become a creative who's like a freelancer and you're also working, or even if you're, you know, you work a different job, but you are creative, I think there's a tendency, at least this is something I know that I had to work myself out of, to like feel like there are different parts of you
mm-hmm.
and separate parts of you that might make you think that like, okay, like, you know, I've got like my work me and my creative right. me, but it's really like, you just have to be one person, and that yeah. one person can only, you know, there are limits to what you can do, and those limits aren't a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
They give you time to rest. They give you time to break, and like, you really have to, and it's hard. I say this being someone who is like consistently working on putting this into practice
mm-hmm.
of like, you do have to listen when your mind is telling you, okay, you need to rest. I know you yeah. want to create right now, but you actually just need to rest.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, there are times that I would just like keep working because I just enjoy working a lot.
So yeah,
I work and I'm just like, you know, I'm not tired. And then at a certain point, I'm like, Fasile, I want to go to sleep. And I'm like, okay, Fasile, we'll go to sleep. And
go
it's
to
like
sleep.
A little voice in my head. It's like, okay, like I'm done working. Like, I'm mentally clocked out for the day. So
mm-hmm.
definitely taking time to listen to yourself is important.
It's important. And asking for help, too. You've mm-hmm. said that quite a few times. And I think that because creating can feel like such a lonely process, even in joint creativity, like theater is, and like film and things like that, where it's mm-hmm. like a team project, you still can feel very isolated in your craft and how you form it and practice it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of help to be asked for. It's yeah. just, sometimes it takes time and like, be gracious with yourself and like how you form the question of asking for
yeah.
help. But it is, I don't think I've ever regretted asking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever come to a point where I'm like, you know, I really wish I hadn't done that. I think yeah. I always end up feeling at least a little relieved, even if I don't get the answer that I want.
Mm-hmm.
At least I've asked.
Right, yeah. And I think that's probably, like, the something that is so necessary that, like, a lot of times you kind of take for granted because you feel like you need to do it all, but it's like, that's not how life works. You
it's
know?
Not
like,
how
you
life
have
works.
To be okay with asking for help. Yeah. And trusting that like people will come into your life like when they need to, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. On the topic of asking for help, I could talk about so many things with you all day, Fasile, but I do want to talk about the beautiful organization that you brought to our attention, the Loveland Foundation.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about them and why you brought them to us.
So the Loveland Foundation.
It's hard, right?
I know it's hard to say. It's easy to read it, though, when I say it like Loveland. The Loveland yeah. Foundation was founded by Rachel Cargill, and I discovered them through Instagram. So mm-hmm. Rachel's whole life work is really about really encouraging Black and Brown people to take up space and like be unapologetic and taking care of themselves and showing up for themselves, and really just addressing race in a way that comes from a place of healing. And education, and really just taking this place of ownership of yourself and of your own narrative. And I think that with the Loveland Foundation, what I love about that is that they specifically cater to like the mental health of Black and Brown women.
Yes.
And I think that that's something that a lot of times we don't really take the time to seek out help, either because of the stigmas around like therapy and mental health. Or even just the fact that sometimes, like, you feel like you need to be, like, the strong person. Like, you feel like you need yeah. to always be the one who carries weight. And it's, like, that's not reality, you know? Like, everyone needs days off, even the like, strongest person you may know. Like, everybody needs help, you know? And I think that she's kind of created a platform where people are okay with asking for help and okay with seeking mental health resources. And I think especially like in the pandemic, like we all need like help.
Really needed, you know? It. Yeah.
It's like there's so many things on your mind, and I think that therapy is something that is so important, at least for me as well. Like being able to talk through things that you have to work on daily, because we're all a work in progress. So being able to support them to me is something that is like a gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to be able to feature them. That will be the start or part of our May organizations. And the Loveland Foundation, one of the things I want to say is that Rachel Cargill really, the whole, I think, the actual foundation started from a fundraiser she did for therapy for Black women and girls. And I think that's just, you know, the way that it's like expanded into a bigger thing is really beautiful, because now the Loveland Foundation is really focused on, like you said, bringing healing to general communities of color, but there's still that focus of making sure that there's help and healing for Black and brown women and girls. And I'm just really excited that we get to bring that to people. Thank you for bringing that to us. And I can't wait to learn more about their work and see what ways that, you know, Greater City Collective can support them. So thank you for bringing that, Fasayo. Well,
thank you for, like, having me think of something. I'm glad I could share it.
Oh, you've been such a joy. I am sad to let this episode go, but I am excited to say that next Wednesday, we are going to dive into the world of books and prose with a writer and publishing queen in the making. A good friend of mine, Tondi Jackson, will be joining us, and I am certain that she is going to have a lot of knowledge to drop on us about publishing and writing and what it means to get your books out into the world and how that works. So I am excited. Y'all join us and be back next Wednesday. But for now, Fasayo, thank you so much. It was so great to have you. You are such a beautiful person to speak to. And I'm so excited we got to do this.
Yes, this is amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. But for now, we will see y'all next time.